This is Mae Brussel. It's broadcast number 679, December the 10th, 1984. This is the anniversary of the murder of John Lennon. I didn't go into that at all. December the 8th was when he was killed. And I think about it, think about the music, think about the musicians, and can update the story from time to time. Saturday Night Live had Ringo Starr on the program. It was the exact date or anniversary of John Lennon's death, and he was clowning around and acting very silly. And the same time he was there, there were vigils outside the Dakota and people remembering John Lennon. And I thought it was totally inappropriate that he accepted that night for the invitation. But I don't put it past NBC to try and pull something like that to negate what's going on outside. And of course, Ringo accepted the invitation. He didn't have to. He's not a person of too much substance anyway, so it doesn't really matter, but it offended me to see it. Now, in the news this past week, we had a shootout similar to the SLA up in Washington, the state of Washington, a small island off there. A fugitive by the name of Robert Matthews. The FBI investigators were looking through the explosion, and they, similar to the shootout in Los Angeles, the SWAT team up in Washington took a helicopter and dropped a fire down on the roof and burnt the house to the ground. A fireball erupted. There was some shooting from the inside out, similar to the SLA, but they might have waited or starved the guy out and not sent in food. But this Matthews was a suspect in a robbery, $500,000 armored car holdup, and also in a $3 million Brink truck in Northern California. So there were two large masses of money that were going to this American Nazi, and they burned the house down. I don't know why it took so long to decide whether or not they even caught him or if they would admit it, or maybe he walked out like John Barry, and we don't know. But a subscriber to the tapes who listens every week just happened to send me an article that came out that November 18th, 1984, from Oregon, the Oregonian Sunday Magazine, their newspaper up there, called Aryan Nations, North Idaho's Neo-Nazis. And this article is very important, not just because there's a Nazi clan up in Idaho, but there's a group that worked directly with their California prison systems, which was what Edwin Meese and Raymond Pecunier and Ronald Reagan were developing when they were running this gang-type warfare and getting these Nazis shaped up in California. And now that this Ronald Reagan is president of the United States, these people have more muscle and more power, and it gives them more encouragement. And so this story of Mr. Matthews is very important, and the roots of it are in this magazine section of the newspaper that I'll share with you. There are two organizations up in Oregon, or two branches of with the same mentality but different names. One is run by Reverend Richard G. Butler, the Church of Jesus Christ, the Christian Aryan Nations. They believe that the whites are the leaders, that the blacks and Asians are taught by us, that they're inferior. This church has been run in Hayden, Idaho for 11 years. That's since 1973. That's right after the Watergate story broke, about a year after, if we had had that nice coup and Agnew was president, and the Nazis from Greece and around the world would have had Agnew, and I think they would have been very comfortable with his organization. I'm always interested when it was started. This was in 1973. The SLA story broke out in 1974, and I'll be going into that, so I just wanted to set that time straight. There are forest lands up there. They have 20 acres and a rifle range and a church and guard towers and their own printing press, and they give Nazi salutes and they burn crosses. And it's similar to the Ku Klux Klan and the Posse Comitatus and the Christian Defense League. And they live at this heavily guarded place, and then some come and visit. Now, Mr. Butler was an aeronautical engineer that trained at Los Angeles City College. He was senior manufacturing engineer for Lockheed Aircraft in Palmdale, California. There's no record of his college work, and Lockheed wouldn't answer to, I guess, the reporters doing this story. They said, "We only keep records to 1974, which is hard to believe in a matter of security or defense, when they are one of the largest defense contractors in the United States, that nothing until 1974 is kept. And remember when Robert Kennedy was murdered at the Ambassador Hotel, it was a Lockheed security guard, Thane Caesar, who shot him from the back of the head. And then I had heard stories that Thane Caesar was working with the Nazi party in Riverside, California. I've never been able to check those up, except that somebody that knew him and knew a pharmacy, her father ran a pharmacy there and knew who Thane Caesar was. And I got that information way back, and we've shared that before. So here's an aeronautical engineer from Lockheed Aircraft, a senior manufacturing engineer. In 1961, he joined forces with the Church of Jesus Christ Christian Aryan Nations in Lancaster, California. And then he had, as a pastor, the original church was founded by Wesley Swift, the pastor, and then he took over. The engineer from Lockheed became Reverend Richard Butler. He took over the congregation after Swift died. He died in 1971. So in 1973, the Lockheed engineer becomes a minister and goes up to this area. It's 20 minutes below Spokane, Washington. There's fishing, hunting, backpacking, sailing, cable TV. There's a lot of radio stations around, three newspapers nearby. It's not too isolated. There's very few minority people. There's 60,000 resident whites around them. He believes in ethnic purity. He preaches it, and they wear Nazi uniforms. And he keeps the idea of Nazism going alive. Hitler's praised in the sermons. They have an Aryan hall and Sunday services where they talk about Jews and blacks. The men wear blue jackets and white shirts and blue ties, and the women wear blue shirts, skirts, and white blouses. They give the Nazi salute, and they go to their church meetings as Nazis. Louis Beam, the former Grand Dragon of Texas and the Ku Klux Klan, is now living with Butler up there in the area. William Fowler, a former Grand Dragon of the California KKK, owns property nearby. He had charges of arson and perjury, kidnapping, assault with deadly weapons. His charges were dropped, and he now lives in Montana. They make a pilgrimage to Butler's church, to their Idaho highway, they call it the hideaway, every year. All the officials of the Klan and the Posse Comitatus from across the United States and Canada, the Aryan Nations International Congress meets there, and again, they put up their crosses, and there's pictures of it in the magazine, and they have right-wing religious, combining religious and political with the Nazism, those elements, the politics of this country, the religious part of it, the Christian part of it, and instructions on weapons, and the Nazi, German Nazi philosophy is brought in. Among these people at this particular group included were Robert Miles, former Grand Dragon of Michigan Ku Klux Klan, and Don Black, the Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan in Alabama. Now, remember several weeks ago on the broadcast, it was 675, I quoted an article, a quotation of Don Black from the Ku Klux Klan, who commended Ronald Reagan for calling the Contras and the guerrilla movement, the people opposing the Sandinistas, as freedom fighters. And there was a press conference in Decatur, Alabama, and Don Black also in prison because in Texas because of their plans to take Dominica. I told you that was a Nazi Klan operation. In the article, Reagan's comments, boy, the paramilitary leaders, Don Black, the Ku Klux Klan leader, serving time for violating the Neutrality Act, made a statement that he was felt well being supported by Ronald Reagan and their paramilitary groups, and it helped the Klansmen to recruit for a new brigade to go down to Central America. So the person that Ronald Reagan is commending is a part of the group of the Church of Jesus Christ Christian Aryan Nations, Richard G. Butler, that's Don Black, Edward Arlt, A-R-L-T, of the Aryan National Official, is if he's from Texas, is one of the people that attends the conferences. Alexei Erlinger, E-R-L-A-N-G-E-R, of the Liberation Movement of the German Reich from Buffalo, New York. I mentioned just 2 weeks ago, Buffalo, New York, as being the pickup center for tetanus and botulism, and this is very important. Buffalo, New York is a headquarter of a lot of Nazi operations, of the laboratories of Dr. Earl Bryan, the fellow that Mrs. Meese had given $16,000 to that caused the furor about the Mies money. They have labs in Buffalo, New York, that are part of Zonix, going back again to Edward Teller and Robert Keith Gray and that Helionetics operation out in California. Buffalo is a large city, I know, and you can't jump to conclusions because it's a certain city, but we can say for sure that it was the pickup point for the tetanus and botulism that could wipe out entire countries. In fact, I mentioned 2 weeks ago that all they had to do is tell it to two men from Canada who bring it back down to Vancouver to the state of Washington and Oregon. I had the route pretty clear. Well, anyway, Mr. Erlinger is part of the German Reich from Buffalo who comes out to with Reverend Richard Butler, who originally was not a reverend. He was an aeronautical engineer from Lockheed. Now, another group up there in the Northwest, there's two of them, and they split up from each other. One is the Northeast Aryan Nations, and those are the North Idaho Nazis. And there's another pastor by the name of Mr. Gilbert from the Restored Church of Jesus Christ, the Social Nationalist Aryans People Party from Post Falls, Idaho. His name is Keith Gilbert, and he's another important biggie in terms of the California prisons. And he gives the same kind of spiel of the Aryan brothers. He was charged in 1981 for a firebombing at the Aryan Hall. He was competing with the other fellow. They want, their philosophies are different. One accuses the other one of being involved with drug traffic, and that's the only difference. One uses drugs and the other doesn't. This fellow, this Keith Gilbert, makes threats to blacks. He says blacks are inferior people, and he has signs, "Niggers, don't let the sun on your head in the Aryan Nation." And he posts them around town in Idaho, and he has posters that say, "Official running nigger target." And they have a picture of black people, and they have them running as targets. Now, remember on past broadcasts, I said that these fellows that were to set up at the island of Dominica were to have Nazi headquarters where they'd bring black people from Africa and use them as targets to practice target hunting, import the blacks to the island to shoot them. That was part of an article I had a long time ago, and it also mentioned in the article there was a suggestion of relationship to John Connally, the former governor of Texas. Connally ties in heavily with the P2. I'll be doing more of that with Licio Gelli, with Permandex, and with the Borghese network of assassinations and coups. John Connally, who played a big part in covering up our 1963 coup in Dallas, Texas, when he was the governor. But it's interesting that they have posters, the official running nigger target, when the links of these people to Dominica had the intent of doing just that, of using them as targets. They also they painted signs on the congregation of their temple, Beth Shalom, saying Jewish swine, and they forced a restaurant, Jewish restaurant run by a Sid Rosen, to leave town in May 82. They got rid of him, and they scared the black people out of town. Some had moved up there. Mr. Gilbert has a crusade against all minority residents, and he had one family up there, a person by the name of Connie Ford, who had three children and was forced to move. She was formerly married to an American Indian, and they lived peacefully, and Gilbert threatened her and threatened the children and said their life would be condemned and they would be served in front of the devil if they didn't get away, because she had also been married to a black man. And Connie Fort, the one who was forced to leave, had been born in Holland, raised in Holland, and lived there during the Nazi occupation and saw the soldiers haul innocent people away, and the Nazi garb threatened her family. And so she left Idaho because when she got the threat, she remembered what it was like in Holland, and she didn't want to put up with it anymore and go through what she saw in that country. Now, the relationship of Gilbert to the California prisons is very strong. Gilbert came from Arkansas and brought his Nazi-style uniforms and his Volkswagens to Post Falls, Idaho, and he has signs on there that say "Area for Aryan" and on his van. And he has begun a five-year relationship in the California prisons that I'm sure has paid off. It began in the 1960s, and of course, Reagan wasn't governor until 1966, but the seeds were planted then. He was convicted for illegal explosives and sent to San Quentin, In 1960, he had 1,500 pounds of dynamite in his home in Glendale, California, and he shot a black man. He had a fight with him, and he said, "I should have killed him." The man lived, and he was sent to San Quentin, and he said he was proud he served time in San Quentin because it was one of the best things he learned for racial disturbances and killings. He said, "It's one of the highest experiences I ever had. Going to my prison was my reward for being involved in a movement that Jews don't find to their satisfaction. I was a crusader in my faith, and I paid the price for the crusade." So he went into San Quentin Prison in California, and he got the idea for recruiting members among the inmates behind the penitentiary cell. So he got information and literature to start flowing into the California prisons. He was in there in the 60s. By the time he got out, he could send his Nazi information into the prisons so that the North State penitentiaries were the prime targets for leaflets and extolling the supremacy of the white race. And he would write to prisoners, but in return, he could give them an address where they could come and get sympathetic help or food or treatment. So it was a two-way thing. Like, he knew who to recruit when they got out. And most guys in prison don't have a job or a friend when they're broke when they get out, nowhere to go. So he started recruiting these various people based upon his experiences that he served behind bars. So he sent them sample packets of the Nazi literature. He says, "We send out thousands of them. We don't recruit them. They recruit us. They have the address of where to go. We don't send anything unless they ask for it." So he started recruiting inside the prisons what he called a holy crusade. This was Gilbert's holy crusade. For someone who was behind bars, he says, you can really appreciate this. And about 20 convicts got out of San Quentin. And it was the Aryan, white Aryan brotherhood that was promoted by Raymond Pecunier in the California prisons. He's now responsible in the Texas prisons for over 20 murders that I keep saying I want to update with you. He was moved from California to Texas, and now they're having the prison riots and the problems and murders that we had in California. But the important thing is that the Nazi literature was mailed to the inmates, and if it was intercepted, they changed the covers, and if that failed, the relatives and friends would bring it in. And the prison system tried to stop his getting literature into the prisons, but they know where he is, and they also advertise in the back of magazines like Soldier of Fortune and Gung Ho and various what are CIA-related guerrilla mercenary magazines on how to kill and so forth. There is all the literature on Nazi connections and Nazi organizations in the back of these magazines and those similar to that, where they can make contact later. But it's interesting that after he served his time, that was the network that he began to develop. One of Butler's followers on death row, right now in southern Iowa, Ohio, correctional facility in Lucas, Ohio, is a fellow named Frank Spezak, Jr. He's a part of Gilbert's group, and he corresponds with him, and he's trying to get him out. He says he's a great patriot to a holy cause because he had murdered a black person, and so he was a hero. And in January 83, the Idaho legislature was disrupted by anti-black, anti-Jewish activity in the state. And they passed a law recently to make it a felony to harass anyone racially in Idaho because these fellows are getting very active and using their muscle to force people to leave town and threatening to kill them. So there have been some laws, and they're trying to sue them for their activities, their harassment. Now that it's on the books, they're trying to keep the literature out of the prisons. But he has a good way to recruit these people, and there's a picture of this fellow, the Aryan Nations, on the cover of the Oregonian. And it's very interesting how the uniforms and the swastikas and the use of terrorism in this country is allowed and heavily financed. This Matthews that allegedly was killed, we'll have to see the proof that he did in fact die at the shootout when he was burned down in Washington, was able to get $3,500,000 for the cause. The great train robbery in London was engineered and described by Otto Skorzeny with money, millions of dollars that went down to Brazil to the Nazi party down there, the bank at Nice, the safe deposit boxes that were emptied out worth millions of dollars went down to the Nazi network in South America. We hear very much about when the black liberation groups or the black groups rob a bank and go on trial in New York. The terrorist organizations, the trials go on for 30 or 40 days, and I don't know whatever comes of them, where there's a Brinks robbery. But when it's the Nazis doing the robberies, just as that fellow in San Francisco was involved with the Brinks robbery and said he was a Nazi, they can take millions of dollars and not account for where it went. And not only that, but you hardly see their name in the newspaper or the ties going back to these people, as I say, from Lockheed or from the prison system and the heavily financed organizations they have throughout the country that are not only national, but they're international. And they're waiting again to take that Central America area, because once they take that and South America, then they turn to North America. And heaven help us, when all those special forces and the Green Berets and the SEALs and the Soldiers of Fortune mobilize and really use their muscle and come out to totally attack the civilian population in this country. In 1974, when I wrote the SLA as the CIA, I said that the SLA was nurtured inside the American prison system. The end goal is World War III. They'll use these people for terror on the streets. And then I said, this was 10 years ago, there will be increased repressions, planned genocide, starvation, widespread unemployment, inadequate health care and housing care, which will necessarily provoke anger and self-defense in the face of death. And this is exactly what J. Peter Grace and Ronald Reagan and the Heritage Foundation are planning now, that kind of pulling back on domestic and forcing reactions of people so that they can bring out the SWAT team to handle the mob. And I referred to government studies at Rand Corporation and other think tanks on how to manipulate the population for maximum effectiveness and profit when the armies put the plans into action, and that's what they're going to do. I also said the covert operations and the psychological warfare techniques were used to form the SLA and were formed in Britain and Germany during World War II. And after the war, the OSS was converted to the CIA by English and German spy masters. That's Wild Bill Donovan bringing in Reinhard Gehlen and his English contacts that he had in psychological warfare going back as far as World War I. I wrote right-wing groups such as the American Nazi Party, the Ku Klux Klan, the Minutemen, and the National States' Rights Party are used as fronts for the CIA and FBI operations. The military intelligence teams give approval, funding, tactical support, and are protected from arrest. I wrote that in 1974 at the exact time when Licio Gelli and the Masonic Lodge were being used. They were formed by the CIA, from the OSS to the CIA, and being used for terror and death squads in South America, and were getting ready for the Bologna bombing. It would be a few years later, but the terrorism of Italy, of Europe, of South America, and the death squads all goes back to our intelligence agencies, the OSS and the CIA, with the United States, English, and German collusion, and helping Italy get its muscle back after World War II and export that meanness down to other countries, as well as the bombings and murders in the continent of Europe. 2 weeks ago, I referred to that terrorist handbook found in prison that was moving to San Quentin Prison on how to kill, how to assassinate, 10 commandments of assassination, how murder plans should be secret and error-free and escape routes. That is the kind of information that goes to the prisoners, to the White Aryan Brotherhood. As a matter of fact, when Edwin Wilson was trying to hire people to do murders for him while he's in prison, he contacted the Aryan Brotherhood in the prison system because they have friends on the outside who can arrange the killings. His message was intercepted and he was charged with the murders, but plenty of them go through that aren't intercepted. And the point is that these terror handbooks aren't getting into the hands of the blacks or Mexican or the underprivileged. They go to the White Aryan Brotherhood so that when they get out, they will know where to go and how to kill in case they've forgotten or in case they're just in on some other charge. I also wrote, the SLA is the CIA, why does the repressive California Department of Corrections encourage what they call Maoist books, revolutionary handbooks, fist salutes, and radical revolutionary dialogue? How come Colston Westbrook bragged that he brought chicks into the black cultural, there was a black cultural society to bait the men. These were supposed to be black radicals, and he was from the CIA. At the present time, I wrote this in 1974, the Department of Corrections is encouraging the study of Maoist literature in prison, and if violence is committed after they escape or parole, they will blame foreign influence for their violence. Now, this is happening right now in Peru with the Shining Path, the terrorism, the death squads killing the drug agents or trying to stop the drug traffic paid by the American government. Stefano Delachaye is down there with this group under the guise of Maoist guerrillas and terrorists. This is a Nazi, a no-Nazi, close associate with Mr. Borghese and Otto Scorzeni, Klaus Barbie, Licio Gelli, titled a Maoist guerrilla group, and it's a Nazi organization. Well, that's what was happening in 1974 in the California prisons under the guise of Maoist. It was the CIA and some very mean people playing around with titles so that when they got out, they could always throw a Maoist philosophy or a Maoist book, and you blame China for the violence. I also wrote in that same article in 1974, the history of the SLA has their roots in the American Nazi Party and secret White House money sent down the line to Lynn Nofziger in California, to Joseph Tomasi and the Nazi stormtroopers. Additional funds for the California Nazis were promised at known meetings at the Hilton Hotel in Los Angeles and the Mayflower Hotel in Washington, D.C. That had to do with our Attorney General, John Mitchell, and it also had to do with Robert Mardian, the Assistant Attorney General in charge of internal security. Now Mardian and his cohort and law partner, a fellow that works with him or worked with him during those years, is representing a fellow that's been charged with murdering a professor in Southern California that I talked about before, who is close to people in Vietnam and worked on peace organizations in Vietnam. So Mardian's name comes in the news again in relationship to defending a murderer who shot down a professor of his in the university in Southern California. 2 weeks ago, I mentioned the deadly germs that were ordered by mail and were to be picked up in Buffalo. In the same SLA article in 1974, I wrote about future germ warfare and the American Nazi Party and threats that were linked to the U.S. military. And I said an alleged SLA memo published in Los Angeles, June 1974, threatened future radiation and chemical poisonings. American Nazis stationed at Fort Ord, California, working on a national project called Operation Blue, were studying books on how to spread botulism and murder large segments of the population. That story is particularly interesting because when I was on KLRB, it was around 1972, and I'd only been on the air about 4 weeks when I got a call from somebody who worked with the Nazis at Fort Ord, California. They were later described in the programs on the program 60 Minutes. And he told me that they were working on botulism to put in water up in the Michigan lakes and various water places in the United States. And in case this country went too far left, they were going to put poison in all the water systems. And I had just been on the air a very short time, and I began to get all kinds of information such as this. And so I called the FBI and got them in touch with the person, and photographs had been sent to me of these people, and then they proceeded from there. The FBI took it. But there were plans at Fort Ord, California, and somebody who was part of them and knew those Nazis sent me pictures of them and in the Nazi uniforms, and they were involved in planning botulism and murder with large segments of population. So that article about wiping out an entire city and picking up these poisons, the botulism and tetanus, in 1984 is particularly interesting because in 1974 I was writing about it and knew about it earlier. And also in that same article I said the SLA had books on chemical and biological warfare, the science of public death, and the genetic effects of radioactivity. The USA Army could use chemical warfare and blame the terrorists and radicals. This was part of the material that they carried around with them. And the germ warfare idea of the tetanus was actually being planned out here in California in 1972. In 1984, they're delivering this botulism and tetanus. Again, as I mentioned, with the atomic bombs that were supposed to be sold to the Arabian countries or to Argentina, and then that was stopped. But Money was put in a bank for other bombs, and I mentioned we don't really know who else has picked up the bombs. The same way I mentioned last week or 2 weeks ago, and I repeat it again, we don't know who else has botulism or tetanus or where the laboratory, which seems right out of Maryland like a CIA front, it sounds like it is, a front there, are the CIA offices making this botulism and tetanus for the American Type Culture Collection out of Silver Spring, Maryland. I haven't done it. These are various serious times, selling atomic bombs, selling botulism, selling tetanus, and seeing these Nazi parties in Idaho and up in Washington and Oregon, and how they were formed from people at Lockheed Aircraft or inside the California prison system with the White Aryan Brotherhood, and the literature that's disseminated on buying the Nazi memorabilia and the uniforms and the hats, and these mail order magazines like Soldier of Fortune that are funded and co-work with people from the CIA, close links to our military, our police departments. How much are the people in this country willing to sacrifice to turn this into another Fourth Reich? We'll leave it at that question. I guess they're willing to do almost anything. This is Mae Bressel at KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove. I'll be back with you next week.